for not necessarily those of our advertisers or staff.
We're WGNS, FM 100.5, FM 101.9, AM 1450, and worldwide at WGNSradio.com.
WGNS studio in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Welcome to the Financial Doctor Show, where cookie cutter financial advice just doesn't cut it. If you're like me and you're tired of one size fits all financial talk radio, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Jason Qualls, certified financial planner and fee only financial life coach. Welcome to our first show of 2012. We'd like to wish you a happy, happy new year. We're grateful for all our listeners out there on this gorgeous Sunday afternoon. It definitely feels more like springtime here in Murfreesboro than wintertime. For more about our show, go to financialdoctorswithans.net. There you'll find links to our email and our Facebook page as well. And for more about me, go to jasonwqualls.com. Questions or comments today, chime in 893-1450. Again, 893-1450. And if you miss any part of today's show, just check us out online. Download our podcast by going to financialdoctors.net. If you have questions or comments today, chime in 893-1450. Again, 893-1450. If you miss any part of today's show, catch us online, financialdoctors.net. There's a whole archive section there with every show we've done over the past couple months. I want to start off today, being the first show of 2012, the first day of the year, by covering what the show, the Financial Doctor Show, is really all about. We've kind of touched on it here and there in certain shows. I've never really just laid it out there. So today I just want to lay it out there before we get to our topic of today, which is how to set meaningful money goals. But what we're all about here and what my goal is to help you, the listeners, make better money moves by giving it to you straight. No hidden agenda on this radio show. We're not here to sell you a book. We're not here to sell you a seminar like most financial talk radio shows. I'm here to give you the direct, no BS truth about financial planning. But the first thing I must help you realize is that financial planning is extremely, extremely complex. And everyone's situation is unique. There is no cookie cutter method that works for the masses. And a lot of radio show hosts would have you believe that there is. 10 times your income in life insurance is usually never enough. And if you don't believe me, go find a widow with two kids and ask her how she's maintained her current lifestyle if her husband passed or wife passed with just 10 times the income. Assuming that, because in today's world, we have more responsibilities than just replacing someone's income. There's college, there's retirement, there's standard of living, there's mortgage payments, and so on. And investing in aggressive growth in income, and international is not a viable investment strategy. Most pundits have just watered down financial advice to make it easier for you to digest, and I believe this really does you a strong and a great disservice. And like I said earlier, they have a hidden agenda, most of them, and they're trying to get you to buy their next $20 New York Times bestseller, and they're trying to get you in the door in some big city to pay them a fee to go listen to them speak. That's their agenda, bottom line. And I believe each and every one of you out there is smart enough to understand complex financial planning. You don't need someone like me patronizing you with oversimplified financial advice. So we're here to give it to you straight on the Financial Doctor Show. Sometimes we'll talk about stuff that's very, very simple and easy. It's sound financial principles that just makes common sense. And sometimes we'll talk about things that are more difficult to understand, but we'll do our best to relay that information the best we can so you can get a good grasp of what we're talking about and just make better money decisions. The second thing that we're about here on the Financial Doctors Radio Show is we are here to pull back the curtain on how most so-called financial advisors really operate. Most of the guys running around out there with financial advisor on their business card are really just financial salespeople. And they don't have any training, maybe a week or two, in what financial planning really is all about. And they also have deep built-in conflicts of interest. When someone is compensated by selling you a product or paid a percentage based on your account size, they have conflicts of interest. You have no way of knowing whether what they're recommending that you do with your money is in your best interest or theirs. And what the response I get from a lot of people is, well, why should I care? Because if you have someone with these conflicts of interest and they are giving you terrible advice based on these conflicts, but you have no way of knowing whether or not the advice they're giving you is sound and in your best interest. And I simply despise that. So I want to help you learn how to get sound, holistic financial advice without secret agendas, where you receive advice from someone who truly works for you, the client, not some insurance company, not some bank, and not some investment company. I also want you to know what real financial planning is not just about your investments. It covers everything from your budget to your tax return to your estate plan and everything in between, including your investments. But it's not just about your Roth IRA and your investment account down at Merrill Lynch. It's everything you're doing with your personal finances. So I want you to become knowledgeable so you're never led down the wrong path again by someone or some radio show or some ex-real estate agent turned author turned radio show host trying to sell you his latest book. And I don't want you to be taken advantage of by someone that is portraying themselves as a financial advisor because they went to some two-week training by some big insurance or investment company and they're allowed to put financial advisor on their business card. So this is something I'm deeply passionate about, and I want you to work with someone that's paid for providing advice to you, not someone that's paid by selling you a product. And I want you to work with someone that's been rigorously trained in all aspects of financial planning and that can act as your fiduciary. And if you've ever listened to the Financial Doctor Show before, fiduciary simply means someone that must act in your best interest because their butt is on the line. So for more about real financial planning, go to jasonwqualls.com or just call in today, 893-1450. Again, the number 893-1450. So now on for the topic of today, the first day of 2012. It's about how to set meaningful money goals, and the most important part behind that is how to figure out the why behind your goals or the purpose. That's the key. That's the secret to success. It's not the what. So we have Grant Lichtenwalter from Middle Tennessee Insurance Group joining me today. Welcome, Grant. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great. So when I talk about meaningful money goals with a purpose, what am I talking about? Well, I want you to be able to make some financial headway in 2012. And not just another year of lost opportunity. And most traditional advisors will ask you things like, well, when would you like to retire? When do you want to send your kids to college? And these questions are great, and that's a goal-setting type question, but you know, our culture is kind of ingrained in us predetermined answers to these questions. And if you just throw out an answer and say, well, I want to retire at age 60 or 65 or 55, and you haven't really thought about why you feel that way, or you say, I want to send my child to UT, and you haven't determined why that's important to you, I don't think you'll ever be able to have enough drive behind that goal to actually make some serious headway beyond just pure willpower. And we have a caller calling in the show today.
Hello.
How you doing?
I have a financial question.
All right, go ahead.
I'm a pastor's son of a local church here in town. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you turn your radio down a little bit?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, my question is, I would like to know, how can I start a trust fund through my church so I can go to college this year? So I would like to know, how can I get that trust fund started up?
So you want to put money away for the benefit of the church or some other organization?
Yes.
For the benefit of the church?
Yes.
And is this your personal money?
Yes.
Does the church currently have an investment account somewhere? Or is this something you're starting, you're just wanting to do with this out of the generosity of your heart? Or is this something you really want to, this be the church's money for?
Well, I'm trying to have the church help me start a trust fund in my name.
In your name, so you can make annual gifts to this fund?
Yes.
What I would suggest that you do if it were me, is look at one of two ways. If you set up a traditional trust account, you know, you really got to go through a lot of legal documents, and I really don't, there's really no benefits there. What I would encourage you to do is just have the church open up a typical investment account, and then you, in turn, open what's called a donor advised fund. And this is an account where you can make charitable gifts to your church, and it could be cash, it could be other assets, but it's a quick way for you to say, hey, I want to give this money to my organization, and I don't have to decide right now what has to be done with it. It gives you a lot of flexibility.
I have a son, and I say, my spiritual mother, she's over my financial matters at the church, and I say, I want to go to college, right, within the next 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Through that church. Now, could that mean my trust fund could be started up by the next 3 years?
Could it be started up in the next 3 years?
Yeah.
Or could you use the money in the next 3 years?
I would like to have the money up by the next 3 years started, by the time I go to college.
So you want the church to pay for your tuition? Is that what the really fund would be for? You know, the only implication there, if that's your time frame, you just not want to go into some investment vehicle that has a long time frame. You're really going to look at something that's more liquid cash, CDs, bonds, municipal bonds that don't really have a lot of market risk tied to it. Stuff with high, strong guarantees. You just don't have the time frame to do it. But if you're looking to do one of two things here, and that is make the contribution to the church. The church has this asset that it can manage and grow. And if it decides to give it back to you for school, you know, that's something you have to handle within your organization.
Right, but wait, my question is, like, if something was to happen to me in church, right? Right.
Right.
So could that mean that a trust fund goes into my church name?
Yeah, the church would now own it.
If something happens to me?
Yes, the church would own the asset once you make that gift. The only other way around that is you keep the money titled in your name.
So the trust fund will go to my name if something happens to me?
Well, if you give it directly to the church, it will become the church's asset. The only way to if you're looking for it to go to the church after you pass away,
yeah.
Is that the benefit of it, that you want to set this college account up, and then once you pass away, it go to the church if you don't go to school?
Yeah, I go to church.
Well, if that's your case, and
I'm trying to get this trust fund so I can have the money to go to college for the next 2 years.
Well, I think the thing I would do here, I think, do you have a will in place?
No.
Well, if you give the money to the church, it's now the church's money. You lose control of it. The only other way around that would be is you keep the money in your name, and then you just designate in your will that portion of your wealth goes to the church if you were to pass away. Once you make that gift to the church, you can no longer have control over that money. So I hope that answers your question, and thanks for calling in. If that didn't answer, send us an email. But more on the two options he was calling about. He wants to, it sounded like from what I gathered, he wants to give money to the church but also have access back to it in the future. That could cause some trickery, because you're not supposed to, if you make a gift that's out of your name, you get tax breaks for it. Really see the benefit of that. Now, the church could come back and pay for his tuition as part of his compensation package, but he would lose all control of the money once he makes the gift to the church. And in my opinion, using a donor advised fund here would make some sense, because he can be flexible in his gifts. They're not expensive to open the account, and it goes directly to the charitable organization. If he does want to maintain control of the account, but just leave it to the church once he's passed away, I think just opening an account in his own name and having the will designate as beneficiary would be more prevalent. So thanks for calling. We're glad you did, and Happy New Year to you. But going back to what we're leading down here, and that is setting meaningful money goals here on the Financial Doctors Radio Show, and how to determine not only what you want, but why you want it. And let me move forward for just a second. I've been a student of all the self-help gurus for years. You know, Stephen Covey, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, if you can count him in that mix. He's a successful author in his own right. A little unorthodox, to say the least. But what they say is, they all claim to have a little secret. And they say, well, the cookie cutter approach they take, and we all know how I feel about cookie cutter approaches, but the cookie cutter approach they take on all the success books takes or say is just get clear on what you want, visualize it, and then write it down. Make it specific and read it every day. So I'll say that again. Just get clear on what you want, visualize it, write it down, and read it every day. That's supposedly the secret. Well, if it were that easy, why aren't more people rich? Why are we having this debate in our country of the 99%ers and the 1%ers? Because I believe that it's just too plain. It's too plain Jane. You need to determine your goals. But just simply writing them down and looking at them and knowing what you want to accomplish is not enough. So that's where we're going to spend our time today, talking about purpose-driven goals. And that's how you set meaningful financial goals. So we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to look at some folks that have done exactly what I've talked about, find purpose in their goals, and we're going to help you take seven steps to set meaningful money goals.
Is your financial advisor really a salesperson? Traditional financial planning is the source of the stress that most people feel in their financial life. This is because most financial advisors are driven by how to sell you financial products rather than providing sound financial advice. The way your advisor is compensated really matters. Hire someone that puts your interest first and really works for you, not a mutual fund broker dealer or an insurance company. If you're looking for someone that can provide you with sound financial advice that's objective and unbiased, call me, Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner and Fee-Only Financial Life Coach at 878-2134. Or go to jasonwqualls.com.
Hello, this is Grant Lichtenwalter with Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. We specialize in shopping your home and auto insurance out with the top-rated companies in the country. And even though our rates are low, we pride ourselves on our service and our attention to detail. We save the average household over $500 a year, while in most cases increasing their coverage. Call Middle Tennessee Insurance Group today at 898-0053, your home for affordable coverage with complete protection.
Welcome back to the Financial Doctor Show. I'm Jason Qualls, your host for our New Year's Day edition of the show. We're talking about meaningful money goals, purpose-driven goals. I'm here with Grant Lichtenwalter from Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. And before we get on to some examples of people that have actually set some meaningful goals with a purpose and the seven steps to do that, Grant, where do you stand on kind of where the pundits are on this stuff? You've been a businessman for a long time, and you know, we're always looking for an edge, and I'm sure you're just as well read as I am. You know, I've been setting goals since I was 20, and you know,
it's funny, it's valuable,
but I don't know how, if that's the key.
Well, I'm ready to hear the seven steps, because I've been actually working on mine just in the format that you discussed, which is write them down, you know, visualize them, write them down, you know. I'm going to do it this year again, tape them to my desk where I can see them every day. But so I'm excited to hear these seven steps, so I can go throw away everything I've been working on and do these.
And I do that, and I'm not negating that. I'm just saying, if we do not get to the bottom of what your purpose is behind those goals, you can say I want to be a millionaire, but if it is not that important to you, you're never going to become a millionaire. And you can say I want to lose 20 pounds, or I don't want to be fat anymore. Well, there's only one thing that's going to make you put down that fork, and is that the power of becoming thin or in getting fit is more powerful or greater than the pleasure you get from food. It's really that simple.
What I found is it's kind of a reminder, and you don't always, like, you get to the end of the year, it's good to review, because like you said, you could sit there and you may have gained 5 pounds and you realize, you know, even though I wrote that down to lose 10, I didn't ever actually address it, you know. And a lot of times it takes a year and a half, 2 years sometimes to get to that 2012 goal. Might not be obtained until 2014, but it's good to write it down.
Well, let's look at some folks that I would argue that are very overpaid for what they do, but they're also extremely rich.
99 people too much.
Yeah. And that is professional athletes. Most of us have played sports at one time or another, girl or guy. We've done something. And we've all watched someone. And growing up, Michael Jordan was one of my heroes. I thought he was, you know, the all-time
best player of the basketball league ever and of the NBA ever. And at times I said this, but how many times have you saw someone like Michael Jordan and said to yourself, man, he's got it made. If I just had his talent in basketball or whatever, something else, if I was just that talented in something, I'd be a billionaire too. And I think everyone has said that. And I'm like, well, really? Is it really just about talent that drove him? And I would argue that you know someone out there that you probably went to high school with or college with that you thought was very talented in their own right, whether it be sports or otherwise, and they just simply quit whatever they were good at to go do something else. And you were probably amazed. Well, this person, I have a good friend that would be great at sales, but hates sales. Mm-hmm. Is never going to go into sales. He could sell ice to an Eskimo, as the expression goes, and he will never, ever touch sales. And I feel like that's wasted talent. But I don't know. Is it really? He just doesn't enjoy that. I also have had another friend that had the ability to go play professional golf, but he just didn't like all the hours he had to devote to it. He wasn't getting fulfillment from it. All the talent in the world, it just wasn't for him. So I don't think talent is enough. And so when you're looking at goal setting, you know, you have to look at, people like to stick with what you know, do what you're good at, set goals based on those kind of things. But I really think to be successful in anything, including building wealth and setting meaningful money goals, you have to find something that really is a trigger for you. Find something that is really is the purpose behind what you're doing. And doing that, money typically follows. And when you're doing what you love for a career choice and you're passionate about it, money just seems to kind of flow naturally. You know, not immediately, but over time. Did Michael Jordan begin playing basketball because of he was going to make tens of millions of dollars? I highly doubt it. He loved the competition and he wanted to be the best at whatever. Sure, natural ability got him further than most, but it was his drive and determination that really took him to the highest level. And I read something once about Dr. J, and I couldn't find the exact quote, but he said, "People look at me," this is a quote from Dr. J, Julius Erving, which is also a basketball player. He said, "People look at me and they think I have it made because of my talent, but they don't see all the hours when everybody is long gone that I'm sitting there shooting free throws." And I found that to be key. And this was from another goal setting book that I think I was reading at some time. I found that extremely beneficial to this talk, because it's not just about talent. It is more about finding the purpose behind what you're doing in life and also your goals. So, people who have achieved success, they really have found something that really is behind their goals. Something we've touched on already here, and it's called purpose. Without purpose, goals, you might as well not even write them down, because the goals you write down aren't worth the paper they're printed on if you don't know why you want to accomplish what the purpose behind what you want to accomplish. Instead of looking for happiness and some future financial goal, financial freedom, like most Americans, because I guarantee you 90% of people out there, they want to get better at money some way, is one of their New Year's resolutions. But how about you set your goals backed up by something that's meaningful to you? And we have another caller on the line. And hello, welcome. Thanks for calling the Financial Doctor Show.
Hello.
Hello.
I wanted to ask you something.
Yes, ma'am.
My husband and I both are in our 80s, and we don't have a whole lot of money put back or anything, but we do have some, you know, little investments that are not paying off anything, but we have some IRA left. One of the big gold companies is trying to get me to back it by gold. Is that advisable?
Somebody's trying to get you to put all your IRA in gold?
Yes, they give you a certificate telling you that anytime you want to turn it back in, that they will buy it back at the cost, the price of gold that day. But it'll be saved. It won't, and nothing will happen.
So they're saying they're going to guarantee your investment.
I won't make any money off of it.
So it's going to be guaranteed.
A safety net.
Well, you know, if you're not going to earn any interest, let's just cover step one. There's things out there that aren't going to pay you, that at least will pay you 1%, maybe 1.5%, that have just as much of a guarantee as gold, but you're at least going to earn something.
Who does that?
Well, you can go out and you can, you know, savings account or 0.25%, 0.5%, you can probably find them at 0.5%. Municipal bonds that are guaranteed insured will pay you 1%, 2%, and 3%. CDs, depending on the longevity that you go out. The point I'm trying to make is there's things out there that have guarantees in them that you're at least going to earn something. So if the guarantee is what you're after, the gold is probably not it. But let's talk about putting all your eggs in one basket. Gold, this last 3 months of 2011, got killed. It got destroyed. I think it lost like 20% of its value. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, people out there that invest in gold, that are gold commodities traders, are still bullish on gold. I'm not some kind of speculator. I have no way of knowing whether gold is going up or down. But what I do know is if you
put off. But would it always be good though?
As a percentage of your money, I would say no more than 10% of your money should be tied up in commodities-based investments, including gold. Because it is not going to be the best performing asset class long term. It's not going to be the thing that makes you the most money comparative to the stock market overall.
Uh-huh.
But what it does is it's a hedge against the stock market, because most of the time it doesn't go up and down at the same time as stocks.
In the past 30 years, gold has been the thing to buy for a short period of time, and the rest of the time it's been one of the worst performing investments. So right now it may be headed back towards, neither Jason and I know what it's going to do, but over the past 30 years gold has been really, really smoking investment for a short period of time, and then the rest of the time it's been really bad. So he's saying, you know, if you're going to do a small percentage.
It's just a hedge. Just like, you know, if you don't want to go out and just only just own stocks, you don't want to go out there and just own bonds, you want a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that little bit of everything is what protects you, because when the prices of goods go up, commodities usually do very well, and stocks usually don't do very well. So to answer your question, no, do not put all your eggs in one basket. I would say no more than 10% of your invested assets needs to be in commodities, especially gold.
Well, now let me ask you this. What if we get in the shape of all the trillions that we owe, and they're fixed to run up another trillion? I may already have had this meeting, the 30th. What is a? I know there's no safe way of anything, but what is the most logical thing for my husband and I do with this little bit of money that we?
If you're looking for pure security and you may need income off of it, you know, are you planning on living off this money, or this money that you think you'll?
No, we take a little bit out. You would try to live off of Social Security, which you can't do, and we take a little bit when we need it out.
How much do you take out on a yearly basis?
I would say about $10,000.
And what percent of the account is that?
We have about 40% left.
But of the $10,000, what's the account valued at today?
It's around $100,000.
So you take about 10% a year out?
Well, you know, counting the little investments that we have.
Right. I think in this situation, you know, we'd have to sit down with you and really discover it.
Well, really would like to.
Send us an email, and the producer. The producer will get your name and phone number off the air, so don't hang up when we get done with answering your question. But I think just from speaking with you, I think U.S. Treasuries, because they're guaranteed by the U.S. government, and you mentioned the deficit, the $1 trillion deficit. But if the government folds, especially the U.S. government, there's going to be no safe haven out there. So you can get a decent rate of return from U.S. Treasuries. They're guaranteed by the government. And so your risk level is extremely, extremely low. And if we set it up correctly for you, you'll still be able to pull off that interest or that $10,000 a year, and it'll be virtually risk-free. But there's other issues we'll need to address, and that's taxes and things like that. It's just looking at, okay, if we're going after a guarantee, we need to find out what the purpose of the money is. If you don't have a need to spend it in the near future, you'll think you'll pass away with it, then we can invest it differently. But let the producer get your information.
I would like to talk.
We'll call you on Tuesday, and we'll sit down with you, at least have a 30-minute or 40-minute conversation over the phone and figure out exactly what you're trying to accomplish and then help you from there. Great call, great question about diversification. And for more on that topic and my philosophy behind asset allocation, and I believe, you know, everybody's heard of modern portfolio theory, and that's the old way of investing money that most financial advisors still invest money with today. And that strategy kind of fell by the wayside in 2008 and didn't really work anymore. So I went searching for something different. It's called functional asset allocation. You can find it on my blog. I speak to it specifically there, at least touch on it. For more about that, you can just go to jasonwqualls.com. So we were talking about meaningful money goals here on the Financial Doctor Show. If you're just tuning in, thanks for tuning in. If you need to call in, 893-1450. I'm joined by Grant Lichtenwalter of Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. But when we talk about goal setting, we must find the purpose behind our goals and why that's important. And I'll tell you, let's just use a real life New Year. We're on New Year's here. And Grant, you were saying you put your goals on your desk and you made the comment, well, I want to lose 10 pounds, but you may have gained 5. Not you specifically, but you gave that example. And I would say, no, everybody out there, everyone out there has probably set the same one or two goals every New Year's Day. And they just, it's a big vicious cycle. I don't know what they are, but whatever, there's one or two goals out there most of the people have, they never make any headway on. And I will tell you, it's because you haven't figured out the why behind what you're trying to accomplish. And I'll say that again. The purpose behind what your goal is what's going to get you there long after your willpower is gone. And let's go on to this. We mentioned the 7 steps. So if you're out there, you're setting New Year's resolutions, and you want to know my 7 steps to setting meaningful money goals. Step one, you have to ask yourself the right questions. So this is after you've set your goals. You've laid out this thing. I want to do this. I want to do that. You've got 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 goals you want to accomplish in 2012. You have to ask yourself the right questions. The right questions is, let's say you want to retire at 55, or you want to drop 20 pounds, or you want to quit smoking. The things you need to be asking yourself in those situations is, what will it mean to you if you accomplish the goal? And then figure out, what will it mean to you if you do not accomplish the goal? How will you feel? Is it really a big deal? Is it, or it may just be simply that you think that someone else wants you to do it. Maybe your spouse wants you to quit smoking, but you really don't want to quit smoking. That may not be a big enough motivator for you. So really ask the questions of, why is it that I want this, and what is so important about it that I would stop at nothing from achieving it? And I think that's something that I really came upon in the last 2 or 3 years, because I've read all the self-help books like you, Grant, and then, you know, write it down. Visualize it, read it every day. I'm not very good. I wanted to put it up on my mirror in my bathroom once, but I never did that either.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. That's, and who it affects, I think, too, like with your kids and stuff like that, doing some of the goals on your goal list now, making it 1 year kind of limits yourself. Do it for like your kids and your grandkids and stuff like that, and kind of give yourself a motivation behind just saying, oh, I want to have this much money in the bank, or I want to lose this weight. You know, it's, you kind of put the reason why you're doing it. I think that's really good. I like that.
And that's a segue into step two. So on the 7 steps to setting meaningful money goals, or any goal for that matter, it doesn't have to be about your money. You need to link your intentions to a purpose. And that's what you were kind of hitting on there, Grant. After you've gotten real clear on why accomplishing each of your goals is important, and let's just go to the quit smoking thing. If you say, well, if your purpose behind it is, I will feel better, I will live longer, and I will get to spend more time with my kids and grandkids, that can be a powerful motivator. Mm-hmm. Versus just someone saying, oh, it stinks, stop doing it.
It's expensive.
Yeah, that... So that may be a big enough motivator, but you really have to find out what it is. And the same thing with for weight, for that matter. If you want to drop 20 pounds, and you have to really figure out why. because that's the only thing going to give you that power. If the why is important enough, there is no how too difficult. And I'll say it again. If the why is important enough to you, then no how is too difficult. And to give another example here, if I were to say, first listener to call in, I'll give you $10,000 if we all go jump off a 100-foot bridge, unless you were just in dire straits and didn't value your life too much, over $10,000, you probably wouldn't go jump off a 100-foot bridge. But if I said, your kids are at the bottom of that bridge and their safety is at risk, you need to save them, I bet majority of people would do that without even thinking about it. That's what I mean by giving your intentions or linking your intentions to a purpose. Mm-hmm. So, in my opinion, when we talk about goal setting and the part to look at every day, if you just said, oh, I want to retire at 55, or I want to lose 20 pounds, or I want to budget better or save more, I think that's great to look at occasionally. I think the part you need to be looking at every day is the purpose. So once you've written down your goal and you have a purpose beside it or below it on your goal setting worksheet or notepad, whatever you're using, if you look at the purpose, that's what's going to drive you. So I have a goal to quit smoking in 2 weeks, and you have a picture of your child or your children beside it, or your grandchildren, and or you say, well, I want to save more money so I can send my child to whatever school. Mm-hmm. And you really got clear on what it was, and you write that, you look at that every day and go, that will bring emotions into your behaviors and make it more likely that you'll stick with it when you're done and your willpower is gone. So step one, ask yourself the right questions. Why do you want what you want? Step two, link your goals to a purpose. So on to step three. And this is crucial. And you need to be honest with yourself. And this is something that I've struggled with in the past. And I'm not a psychiatrist, but I see this a lot in my clients. It's just being honest about where you are. And Grant, you probably see this in your practice as well. Yeah. When you're touching people's lives and in dealing with their financial situation. People that really don't want to disclose to you where they're at, they're not really honest, they're going to make the situation seem a lot better than it is. But if you don't know where you are, how do you expect to get anywhere? So you need to sit down. When we're talking about money goals, prepare a realistic financial statement. Be honest with yourself. You have nothing to be ashamed of. And to kind of throw myself out there, I made a bunch of money in my late 20s, only to give it all back by the time I was 30 because I was stupid and took too much risk. I'm not ashamed of that. I could have wallowed in my sorrow, but I learned from my mistakes. I got even smarter. I built another successful business, and I was a lot better off. I do not regret the decisions I made back then. No, I wish I could just erase it and know what I know now. But if I had the option of erasing it and not knowing, I would take let it happen and make me more educated, more knowledgeable, because it has made me a better financial planner. It has made me a better father. It has made me a better person. So my mistakes have helped me pave the way to where I'm at today. So be real honest with yourself and be real honest with the ones that you care about. Without honesty, you're not going to get anywhere from a financial standpoint. If you say, well, I have this debt over here, or I'm spending this much money on Starbucks every day, it's okay. You find a way to justify it, you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's good stuff. And maybe put some of those reminders. I mean, I've made mistakes in business too, and trusting the wrong people. And, you know, maybe at the bottom of your goals, put some little reminders down there at the bottom about, you know, trust people that are worth trusting, or, you know, don't take too much risk. Put those reminders in there along with the goals, so you got both ends of it, where you've been and where you want to go.
And that's a good point, because I can't really speak to the thought process of everyone, but I'm the type of person, if you were to make me angry today or now, I'd be happy with you 5 minutes from now. I'm just very forgiving. I don't let stuff bother me for a long time, but some people hold on to grudges for a long period of time. So that's good for me to have those motivational reminders, say this is why it's important. It's what I want to accomplish in my life, but without having to see what it is and why it's important, and really letting me know where I'm at, I think is key. So you make a good point. So step four on meaningful money goals is you need to formulate a game plan. And let me give you an example of that. And it took me a while to digest this. I came across this probably when I was about 21. And I used to set a goal. So I want to get in shape. And I said, what's the first thing I'm going to do? I'm going to exercise every day for an hour. Well, nobody wants to get up and exercise every day for an hour. Nobody wants that. That's not a game plan. That is an action step.
Mm-hmm.
The game plan is more specific than that. It is, I'm going to exercise in this way for this long, for this amount of time, this many times a week. You're really specific. And the same thing with your money. If you're trying to develop a budget, well, I'm going to sit down on Tuesday. I'm going to spend an hour, hour and a half of my time going through where I'm at and where I want to be and be real clear and real specific on the plan to get you there. Because just saying, hey, I want to save more. I want to save 10% more. And you do a one-page budget and it takes you about 5 minutes and you're done. More likely, you're not going to accomplish that goal. And to give an example on this, you know, everybody's heard of Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll. And one of the things that was said about him, and I don't know if this is true or not, this came from one of the self-help books I had read years ago, but you know, Elvis had gotten real frustrated with his weight late in his life, and he decided, okay, he just had enough, and he wanted to go lose some weight. So he took off on a tear and ran like 10 miles. And after the 10, he hadn't ran who knows how long. And he about collapsed when he got back. That was an example of not a very specific game plan, because Elvis didn't really want to run 10 miles. He wanted to lose weight so he'd feel better about himself and be, you know, be more attracted to his fans. So if he had really formulated a game plan, he probably wouldn't have tore out at 10 miles and about killed himself. So that's the same thing here we're talking about. You want to be specific in your planning and lay out specific guidelines and steps. Create a daily, a weekly, and a monthly plan. You know, have steps you take at each period. A daily step, a weekly step, a monthly action step. Break it down into bite-sized pieces, because we all get, when we think about big picture stuff and we have to do 10,000 steps, we get to feeling overwhelmed. So that's the key to formulating your specific plan, is to not let it be overwhelming to you. So step five in setting meaningful money goals is you must force yourself to take one small step each day. I don't care if you wake up and your kid's sick tomorrow and you have a relative in the hospital and you got a creditor calling you or you got something else that is pressing, you have to do at least one thing that's relevant to you accomplishing your goal. I don't care how small or big it is. Just do one thing each day to get you closer. And something that was said to me, just imagine if you only got 1% better each day, where would you be in 1 year? And 1% a day is not much. Just think of it from a lifting weight. If you got 1% stronger from lifting weights each day, you could be a daggone bodybuilder in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Now, that is not a realistic statement there, but it's making the point that you need to do something. Always do something. If it's just a phone call, if it's just making a note, if it's just scheduling a to-do in your calendar, do something to move you closer to your goal. So on to step six. And this is one that I think maybe where you'll see the most benefit between where you are and where you want to be. And step six is track your results. And this is something I've never done until the last year or two. And what I started doing, because I'd researched it and read a lot about, actually this is only the first time I felt like somebody put it to me straight from one of the self-help gurus, was they said, if you want to start saving money, start carrying a little book around. Write down every penny you spend. If you buy a stick of gum, write it down. You buy gas, write it down. At the end of the week, look at where you spent your money. And people are like, well, I know where I spend my money. I can look at my check card. But I can tell you this. What will happen, it'll make you more cognizant and aware of where you're spending your money. And you'll say, man, I can't believe I spent that much money on that. I can't believe that I wasted that much money on Starbucks in a week or 2 weeks, whatever it was. But then what it will turn into, besides making you aware, you'll stop spending money because you'll get tired of writing crap down in the dang notebook. That's essentially it. So if you have steps you need to take and you're writing, and the flip side to it, if you have a goal to work out every day and you start writing down, you get off on a good 2 or 3 day start and you're writing it in your book and you're tracking how long you're working out for and what you're doing, then on day four you don't do it and you still have that book with you, what's going to be your reminder? It's going to be kind of that something other than yourself to hold you accountable, even though it is yourself. But what you can do with that information is, look, when you wake up this time next year and you had a goal to lose 10 pounds but you gained 5, you'll at least know why you didn't accomplish it.
Yeah. Yeah, this saying, I mean, in sales is activity breeds activity. And what you're saying is, and you know, I like it, you know, and we do it at the office. Write down what we've done to motivate us to move forward. And if you, like you said, if you've got written down your weightlifting stuff, your exercise, and you see some results there, and then you miss a few days, if you've got that results there, and it's something tangible where you can kind of, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to go straight home from work, or, oh, I'm not going to get up early and go tomorrow. If you've got that book and you say, well, wow, you know, I was here and now I moved to there, you know, I want to keep that going. It gives you something, whether it be in sales or weight loss or stop smoking or whatever. That, again, I like that a lot. That's something very important that you can do other than the stuff that you kind of think about.
Yeah, and I tell you, it helped me tremendously. One, because I hated, I got tired of writing in that book, but I would encourage you to do it for at least, give it a chance for 2 weeks. I know it sounds silly carrying around a notebook to track everything that you're doing, and that's just not my personality either. But what it does for you is at least it lets you be honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You get to say, well, I want to quit smoking, I want to lose weight, or I want to save more. And you're not doing anything about it, at least it lets you be honest with yourself and say, well, maybe I really don't want to save more because I'm not doing anything that allows me to save more because I'm still spending $4 a day on a cup of coffee at Starbucks. So at least you'll know exactly why you're not achieving, and you can't make any more excuses for it. That will give you power right there. And knowledge is power, people.
I had a friend, he wanted to quit smoking, so he was making a run at it around his birthday, so I went and got him Nicorette gum. I don't know if you ever bought any of that. I hadn't. I went, thought, I'll, you know, $10 or whatever.
No,
I went
and like
bought
50 bucks.
Yeah, I went and bought him a big box of Nicorette gum for his birthday, and because he had expressed to me that he wanted to quit smoking, so I go spend this money on his birthday present for him. And next thing I know, he's smoking again. It's like, wait a minute.
And chewing gum, same time.
And chewing gum while he's chewing up his birthday present. So he didn't go about it the right way. He told me about his goal, but then he didn't, like Jason said, he didn't track it. He didn't go through the steps that he needed to really make it happen.
And it wasn't important to him enough. And you know, everybody out there knows that you're going to die eventually from a cause from smoking, but we do it anyway because the fear of the sickness or death is not as pleasurable as you get from smoking.
It was more important for me to him for him to quit smoking than it was.
Hopefully
for
he gave me your money back.
No, it was a present. It was his birthday. Whatever. I was hoping you'd get better use out of it, but that's okay.
On to step 7, and this is important as well. You have to reevaluate, and this is where tracking kind of helps you. You need to reevaluate your progress versus your purpose every 3 months. Every 3 months. You need to look at what have I done over the first quarter of 2012 versus where I said I wanted to be. And maybe your purpose changed. Maybe you did something that did not work. That's the time you can change your action steps. You can change your course and get on the right path, on the right plan. So if you said, I want to save more money for 2012, I want to save 10% more of my income, and you're tracking, you know exactly what you're spending, and you have down the purpose, and you look at it when it comes up April 1st, and you go, man, I only saved 5%. Where did I go wrong? You look back at your tracking. You can do things and make adjustments to help you get further along. So let's recap. The 7 steps to meaningful money goals. Ask yourself the right questions. Get really clear on why you want to accomplish what you want to accomplish. Just don't write down, I want to lose 20 pounds. You need to know why that's important to you. Step 2, link your intentions to a purpose. Whether it be family, loved ones, children, how you'll feel, every goal should be linked to a purpose. And number 3, be truthful with yourself. Find out exactly where you're at. Be honest. If you're a size 6 and you tell everybody you're a size 4, say you're a size 6. If you're 50,000 in debt and you tell everybody you don't have any debt, you need to be real clear with you and yourself and your spouse, because without knowing where you're at, you'll never get where you want to go. Step 4, get specific on your game plan. It's not something you can hash out in 5 minutes. You need to do a weekly, a monthly, and maybe even a quarterly plan, and especially a daily plan. But map out those steps. Break it down into bite-sized pieces. Step 5, force yourself, no matter what, to take at least one small step each day. no matter what it is. If you have two or three goals or top goals, or you have three top goals, take at least one small step each day towards those. And step six, track everything. Get a notebook. Do this for 2 weeks for each one of your top goals and write down everything you're doing to move you closer to that goal, or not doing for that matter. And then take a look at it in 2 weeks. I guarantee you, because you may know the saying, what, it takes 8 days of doing something to create a habit.
I think it's
and that's what this is about. Yeah. It's about if you do something and this notebook is forcing you to write it down, it will become habit. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to change your habits. You're trying to change your spending habits. You're trying to change your eating habits. That's the purpose of tracking your results. And then step seven, reevaluate every 3 months. Figure out what's working and what's not working, and change courses if you need to. And that's what we do with my clients in the financial planning process. So we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to recap everything. We're going to probably ramble on some more.
I've got a quick question. Okay. I'm hoping you're going to put this on the website so we can all go there. When will that be on there? Is it already on there?
It is not. I'm going to put it on there tomorrow. I'm going to try to map it and do a little, almost like a questionnaire with a checklist, so you can just print it off. It's real easy just to go through the exercise to save yourself some time, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. I have all this stuff. I'll put it up on the website under resources under jasonwqualls.com.
Great.
So we're going to go to break, come back, and recap. Thanks for tuning in to the Financial Doctor Show.
Is your financial advisor really a salesperson? Traditional financial planning is the source of the stress that most people feel in their financial life. This is because most financial advisors are driven by how to sell you financial products rather than providing sound financial advice. The way your advisor is compensated really matters. Hire someone that puts your interest first and really works for you, not a mutual fund broker dealer or an insurance company. If you're looking for someone that can provide you with sound financial advice that's objective and unbiased, call me, Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner and Fee-Only Financial Life Coach at 878-2134 or go to jasonwqualls.com.
Hello, this is Grant Lichtenwalter with Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. We specialize in shopping your home and auto insurance out with the top-rated companies in the country. And even though our rates are low, we pride ourselves on our service and our attention to detail. We save the average household over $500 a year, while in most cases increasing their coverage. Call Middle Tennessee Insurance Group today at 898-0053. Your home for affordable coverage with complete protection.
Welcome back to the Financial Doctor Show. I'm your host, Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner, Fee-Only Financial Life Coach. If you got to chime in here the last 6, 7, 8 minutes of the show, the New Year's Day edition, 893-1450, again, 893-1450. You can also go to financialdoctorswithans.net and send us an email. You can also Facebook us there. So today we've been talking about, for the majority of the show, how to set meaningful money goals. And that's a fancy title to say your goals must have a purpose behind them. It's not enough to know just what you're trying to accomplish. You have to know why you want what you want. And I do this with my clients in our first or second session, because if they tell me whatever their goals are, if it's not important enough to them, they're not going to stay on course. And I'll give you a real life situation. You know, just think in 2007, you said, I want to invest more in the stock market by 5% because I want to be able to retire at 55. And then 2008 happened. If it wasn't that important to you, the first thing you're going to want to do when the market drops 30% is pull your money out. So you have to know why you're staying in the course and why it's important. Now, education helps in that scenario, understanding the markets, but without purpose, you probably would have, that goal would have fell by the wayside. So, Grant, you know, give us some of your past experience with goal setting. And maybe I can chime in with mine, because you're probably like me. You've been setting goals and writing goals. You've accomplished some, haven't accomplished some. And you ever gave any thought why you did some and why you didn't?
Some of them you do, but some of them, you know, you kind of take it for granted while you're doing it, and you don't really spend enough time and effort into it like you've gone over, you know, with this. I think it'll make it more where you look back at the year end, I think you're going to have better results. And again, you know, action, you know, breeds more action, you know, reaction, you know, the more you accomplish, the more you're going to stay on it, you know. And I haven't, in the last couple of years, I've been bad about setting goals. It's not been a priority like it was when the beginning of my career. And you know, if you want to know how you were so successful or what you did so good before, you know, just go back to what you did before and, you know, redo it. Only I think this time with what we've talked about today, it's going to be even better to be able to sit down, do what I did before, but then add these extra steps to really, you know, bring it into focus, what's going on with the goals.
Yeah, you know, I've looked back. I've kept every goal sheet I think I've had since like 2000 or something. And the ones that, if I look back knowing what I know now, the reason I didn't do what I thought I wanted to do, because it really wasn't something. I was putting those goals down for someone else, and it wasn't important to me. So having a purpose is the only way you're going to get where you want to go. And that's a big key to this, people. So just ask yourself some really tough questions. You know, everybody wants to be rich and thin, but not all of us are going to be rich and thin. And it's not because we don't have the drive, because some people aren't
not that important to
it's
them.
It's just not, you know, some people are okay where they're at. You need to be happy with yourself first. So don't set goals based on what somebody else wants. Set goals and figure out the why, because it's what will make you happy and fulfilled. That's really what we're talking about here. Because you know, not everybody wants to be a swimsuit model, right? And wants to spend 3 hours a day at the gym. And that's okay. But it's really whatever you write down as a goal, if you haven't put a purpose behind it, it's like having a car with no gas in it. So we've talked about a lot. The first thing we discussed here today was what the show was all about. So to recap that, this is basically a truthful, honest radio show with no agenda. We want to educate you on every aspect of financial planning. We don't want to sell you a book. We don't want to sell you a seminar. We just want you to know what unbiased advice is like, because there is no cookie cutter approach. There is not. I wish there was. I wish that I could write one book that was right for everybody, and then I could basically just give that book to all my clients and say, go follow these steps and you'll be on your way. Everybody is different. Just like if you work with a personal trainer, if your personal trainer may tell me to do something differently than they would tell you to do, because our bodies are different. Same thing with your money. Everyone is different. And then secondly, you know, there's a lot of guys out there running around that say they're financial planners or financial advisors when they don't know anything about it. So work with someone that gets paid for advice, not by selling you something. And work with people that actually know their craft. And Grant's a part of the show because, one, I trust Grant to do what's right for his clients over at Middle Tennessee Insurance Group. And two, I believe he knows his business. He is a specialist in the areas of property and casualty insurance and all other areas of insurance for that matter. And that's why his advice is crucial to be a part of the show. So before we close out of here, the last minute and a half, anything to add, Grant?
Just some things maybe for people to put on their goal, things related to insurance. I know this is kind of a cliche one, but it's I don't know if people out there saw over the holidays where the family burned up. They weren't sure if the smoke detectors worked, and it was a very sad story. So I know it's cliche, but check your smoke detectors. I mean, I go into people's homes on appointments, and you'll see them disabled where they rip the batteries out and stuff like that. And it's a hard lesson to learn. So definitely check that out. With the hail activity we've had in the area, put that on your goal to get a roofing contractor out there and take a look at your roof. I had the adjuster at my house yesterday in my other property, and it was pretty bad. And I actually, being in business as long as I have, I learned. I took some time and climbed up the ladder and took a look at the roof, and he showed me some pictures of my own roof, showing me, you know, where I can be a better insurance agent, you know, because the claim side is something that you don't get to deal a lot with as much. And so I learned a lot yesterday. So I recommend you call the roofing company first, have them come out, take a look. And then if you have any questions about the whole process, you can give me a call, whether you're my client or not. I'll be glad to help you out. 615-898-0053. So that's some stuff that's important. You have 1 year to turn in a claim, so the clock is ticking. So you don't want to procrastinate that to the end of next year. You won't have the option.
Good deal. Well, my number 878-2134. The 7 steps of meaningful money goals will be on the website, jasonwquals.com. Remember, there's more than one way to skin a cat in financial planning. Real Financial Planning is objective, covers your entire financial life. Again, go to financialdoctors.net or call 878-2134. Thanks to our guests. Thanks to the producer. Thanks for our callers and our listeners. Till next week, I'm Jason Qualls, certified financial planner and fee-only financial life coach. Thanks for tuning in to the Financial Doctor Show.